When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dress the History of Fashion is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 million people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary. Hello, Dress listeners, and welcome back to part two of our fascinating and incredibly moving conversation with embroidery historian Isabella Rosner, who joins us this week to discuss her recently published zine, Stitching Freedom, Embroidery, and Incarceration. You may remember from part one of this episode on Wednesday that Isabella is one busy embroidery historian. Not only is she a fellow podcaster with her So What podcast about historic needlework, but she is a research associate at Whitney Antiques in London and the curator of the Royal School of Needlework,
which, as the name suggests, is an embroidery school at Hampton Court Palace in London and comes with a rather fascinating history, Cass. As their website tells us, quote, "The early history of the Royal School of Needlework is linked with the social, cultural, and political history of Victorian and Edwardian Britain. Founded by Lady Victoria Welby, the Royal School of Needlework began as the School of Art Needlework in 1872 in a small room above a bonnet shop on Sloane Street in London, initially employing 20 ladies, moving in 1903 to a new purpose-built center on Exhibition Road close to the V&A Museum, where at its peak, the Royal School of Needlework employed around 150 workers. That's amazing. Fast forward to today, and it is an internationally renowned and respected institution, a reputation our guest today plays no small part in maintaining.
There are so many embroidered histories to share, Dress listeners, which is exactly why Isabella has her very own podcast dedicated to the topic, and which is why she is joining us again today for part two to continue to share some of the embroidered stories to be found when freedom was out of reach for its creators.
Isabella, welcome back to Dressed.
Isabella, welcome back to Dressed.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back.
So on Wednesday's episode, we talked about incarceration in the context of workhouses and mental health facilities. But of course, it is not unique to those places, as is expressed in your sixth section in the book, Filled With My Love Always, which is about Ashley Sack, which, quote, tells the story of slavery in America and the love and care it attempted to destroy but could not. Please tell us about this heartbreaking story that is literally embroidered onto this sack.
Okay, so this is a cotton sack from about the 1850s, and it has embroidery on it. And I'm going to read the embroidery, if that's okay, because I think that it tells a story that I cannot tell in my own words. So it says, "My great-grandmother Rose, mother of Ashley, gave her this sack when she was sold at age 9 in South Carolina. It held a tattered dress, 3 handfuls of pecans, a braid of Rose's hair. Told her it be filled with my love always. She never saw her again. Ashley is my grandmother, Ruth Middleton, 1921. This 1850s bag was embroidered upon by a woman named Ruth Middleton in 1921. And what she tells us is that her grandmother, Ashley, was an enslaved individual alongside her mother, Rose. So that's Ruth's great-grandmother. When Ashley was 9, she was sold elsewhere, and Rose and Ashley were separated. And when Ashley was taken away, Rose gave her this bag, this cotton bag, full of Rose's most precious possessions. So it was handfuls of pecans, it was a tattered dress, it was her own hair. And Ashley and Rose were never reunited. They never saw each other again. That's an incredibly heartbreaking story. Arguably the saddest story in all of them, but it's sometimes quite hard to figure out what is the saddest story. This is a particularly heartbreaking story that is really an important material survival of enslavement in America. We have very, very few surviving embroideries specifically that are tied to slavery. And the fact that this story survived the 70-ish years between Ashley and Rose and Ruth is powerful in and of itself. But the fact that it survives another 100 years after Ruth embroiders it is equally and even more powerful and says so much about lineage, about family. And, you know, family is not a thing that is talked about a lot in this zine because a lot of these stories aren't about family. They're about the individual experience. So this was an important story to include for multiple reasons, but that is one of them. It's about who remembers you and what do they remember and what do you have left to you when you are in spaces of incarceration. And I include enslavement as one of, you know, the ultimate forms of incarceration. And it's about love against all odds and the human connection. And I say at the end, it's about specifically the love and the relationships and the lineage of Black women in America. Black women are such a central part of America's textile story, of their stitching story. And a lot of that early history is lost because of how textiles were used and reused, and they were in poor condition and they were, you know, poor quality. And there's reasons why these stories are gone. But this story says so much about a huge group of people, one microcosm, one micro history of what it meant to be enslaved in the United States and what possessions were available to you. And the fact that Ruth Middleton uses embroidery to tell that story, I think, is incredibly powerful. And Tia Miles wrote the best book about Ashley Sack, and it's called All That She Carried. And she did research and found that Ruth was, you know, a stitcher throughout her life. And the fact that this is the way that she chose to tell that story, I think, speaks to the power of embroidery. It's such an asset to anybody who doubts embroidery's significance that history is not just the history that's told with a pen and paper, that it's also the stuff that people stitch using a needle and thread.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Tia Miles, too, because All That She Carried, The Journeys of Ashley Sack, is an incredible book, and she has been on my list of potential guests for a very long time. So this is my cue to try to get her on the podcast, because it's such a beautiful, beautiful book and so incredibly researched.
I think she does such an incredibly good job of taking one object and turning it into the entire world. It's a whole family story and what it means to be a human in connection to stuff. The fact that this one object can span, what, like a 400-page book, and it's right. A fascinating and devastating story. I think she does such an amazing job.
Well, and you do too, right? Because that's what this book is. This book is using textiles as a conduit to these greater stories. And this is something we talk about all the time on Dressed. One of our core tenets of the podcast is the stories we literally wear, the stories that are literally sewn into our garments. And that just really speaks to the value of textiles and material culture.
Absolutely. They tell us so much about what it means to be a person.
And, you know, with textiles, especially in clothing, it's one of the most human aspects of material culture that exists. Arguably the most human. Something
Absolutely.
We all have a relationship with and something that is so incredibly intimate to who we are, even if most of us don't necessarily think of it that way. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's just so special because of that reason and more. More than one example in the book memorializes a moment or an event while representing incredibly significant moments in history. So Ashley Sack is, of course, one example. You also have a section on suffragette prison stitching that you write about in your fifth section, Bold Bad Ones. That's another example. And then you have this section, and this is a direct quote from the embroidered work, which is "Fuck Hitler." Created while its maker was in prison during World War II. So I would love if this story was so unexpected and so incredible. Please tell us about British Army officer Major Alexis Castagley and his embroidery.
I feel like I am the number one, like the president of the Major Alexis Castagley fan club at this point, because this is the story I tell everybody. If you do not know anything about the history of embroidery, I'm telling you this because it has everything, and it breaks down all of your preconceived notions of what embroidery is. So Major Alexis Castagli was a British general in the army in World War II, and he was captured and put into a German prisoner of war camp in 1941. And he was part of the textile trades before the war, so he kind of knew what was up with sewing. And he, while in the camp, got a piece of canvas from another prisoner and pilfered. I like using the word pilfered because it feels like a little, you've just taken this disintegrating sweater, jumper, from a Cretan general, and he unravels it to create thread, and he teaches himself how to cross stitch. And he's making this object that people call a sampler, and it is sampler-esque. It has in the middle this whole description, and he's saying, Major A.T. Castagli, this is his number, it's 1941, it's December, and this is where he is in Germany. And it's surrounded by these national symbols of the players in World War II. And these symbols that I can't figure out what they are. People are thinking they're bombs. Some people think they're mushrooms. I like made a TikTok about this sampler, and everybody was like, what are these objects that are dotted around the sampler? I do not know. But what I do know is that the sampler has a secret, because in this border, there's this one border that's very narrow, two of them actually. There are these very narrow borders that have dots and dashes. That's actually Morse code. And it says over and over again, God save the king and fuck Hitler on repeat. What a delight.
Amazing.
The thing that's so crazy and the thing that really does blow people's minds as well as my own is that he was transferred to multiple other prisoner of war camps, and he was in prisoner of war camps for 4 years, and this thing was on display in all of them. The Germans never caught on to the fact that he encrypted his sampler with these sentiments. And they were so like, wow, look at this guy, that he was allowed to start an embroidery club. And they used their Red Cross materials that they got, and they stitched. And that's his most well-known piece, and it should be, because it's absolutely gobsmacking. But he embroidered the entire time he was in those POW camps, and he would embroider letters to his children. There's this map that he made of what life was like in the cell, basically. And it said, it like has all of these signs, and it does actually replicate the signs that are allowed, like shower every 14 days. This is where the coal is, all of this stuff. And then there's this flap that you can lift that says, do not open, I think in German. And underneath it is a British flag. And I just love this guy. He's so bold, so brash. And he follows in a pretty long lineage of people who are using embroidery as code. And Mary Queen of Scots, the first person in this scene, starts that story that she is saying some really bold stuff to the people who can speak her language. And I think that Castagli is such a good example of flouting power, of just throwing it back in their faces, but doing it in a subversive, secret way. And his story is also delightful because it's one of hope. He gets out of the POW camps, right? And he embroiders for the rest of his life. He teaches his son to embroider. They embroider together. And he continues to embroider butterflies, a lot of butterflies, which was a symbol he embroidered frequently in the POW camps as a symbol of freedom, that even when he got his freedom, he was still embroidering that same symbolic message. I love it.
It's just, this story is just so remarkable. You quote from a hand-stitched letter he sent to his 11-year-old son at the time that reads, "It is 1,581 days since I saw you last, but it will not be long now. Do you remember when I fell down the well? Look after mummy till I get home." And you said on this letter, he stitched a map of Crete involving 45,000 stitches, 190 hours of work. And you also mentioned hope, because this story is just remarkable. He was freed in 1945. He flies back to Britain. And you end with this: once his son Tony retired, the two men began to stitch together. And he stitched for the rest of his life. And you can look him up online. There's stories written about him. And just the hope and the beauty that came out of this horrific situation is just remarkable.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, I said about Ashley Sack that there's not a lot of information in this scene about family. But one of the other rare instances where that theme of family comes up is in this story, that it's father and son doing this together. And all of these objects are still in the family's possession. These are some of the only objects that aren't in public museums. And while that's a disadvantage in terms of seeing them and accessibility, it speaks so much to the value of family and lineage and connection that it started with this man in a really desperate set of circumstances, and it became a family art, a thing to bring multiple generations together. And the fact that it's men, it's a soldier, I think the story itself is so remarkable, but I think that it also does a lot to really rewrite our understanding of what embroidery is. Embroidery is exactly everything. It's for everybody in all circumstances.
Yeah, it absolutely challenges that narrative that needlework is the domain of women.
Dress listeners, whatever your reason for wanting to learn a new language, whether it's an upcoming international adventure, communicating with your friends and family abroad, or even professional purposes, Rosetta Stone has got you covered.
As the trusted expert in language learning for 30 years now, you can join millions of Rosetta Stone users to learn any of the 25 languages offered. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, and so many more.
And this is fast language acquisition, friends. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. And right now, you can get lifetime access to all 25 of Rosetta Stone's language courses for 50% off. That's language learning for 25 languages for the rest of your life, which, Cass, is frankly amazing.
It is. And what are you waiting for, dress listeners? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Dress listeners, did you know that you can save on everything from fashion to beauty, home decor to groceries, even kids' school supplies with Rakuten?
Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. Beauty, clothing, electronics, home, department stores, pets, you name it. You're already shopping at your favorite stores, so why not be saving while doing it? It really is a no-brainer.
How does it work, you ask? Well, stores pay Rakuten a commission for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the commission with its members. You get paid via a check or PayPal quarterly.
Membership is free, and it's easy to sign up. So join the 17 million members who have already saved at their favorite brands. Start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. That's Rakuten.com. Dress listeners, are you not feeling like yourself these days? Do you suspect it might be related to some of the hormonal changes all women experience? Well, then Hormone Harmony is here for you. Hormone Harmony capsules contain science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows.
So whether you find yourself in menopause, perimenopause, or simply experiencing racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time, or even a low sex drive, Hormone Harmony is here to get you feeling like yourself again.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
So Castagli's work is not the only to have hidden messages in it. You also mentioned Mary Queen of Scots, of course, but he's also not the only embroiderer featured who was incarcerated during World War II. Tell us about the women of Changi Prison or Changi Prison and Rada Nikolic.
So this is a trio. There was the trio of kind of Victorian ladies. Now there's the trio of the World War II people. So in Changi, which is in eastern Singapore, around the same time as Castagli, 1941, all of the people who are living in that area get rounded up and also put into a prisoner of war camp. And the men and women get put into different camps. The children go with the women and the men go elsewhere. And even though these camps are not separated by very much, they have no interaction with the exception of occasional heavily monitored meetings. And because there was no communication between families, there needed to have been, but there wasn't. These women came up with this idea of creating patchwork quilts to create coded versions, coded messages for the men in the camp to let them know how their families are doing. And it was about depicting a part of yourself, right? Something that was important to you. But what came with that was women speaking to changes in their lives. For example, you'll have a blue bunny. It's like, oh, this woman was pregnant and had gave birth to a son in this POW camp, and the husband needs to know. You get a lot of, you know, little depictions of toddlers, that sort of thing. It's like, oh, hey, I can't see you right now, but your child is doing well. Your children are doing okay. So these quilts were made. There were three of them, and they were brought to the hospital in the camp. And that is how that information spread, that the men in the hospital would be like, oh, my God, like, George, I see your wife, Ethel, is doing okay. Or like, Francis, look at this. Molly says she, like, here's what she has depicted for you. And it was another way of, yeah, of code. And I like that there is an example in this zine of quilting, patchwork quilting here, because embroidery is often talked about in a vacuum. And I know that I'm part of that problem. But embroidery is part of this much larger world of needlecraft, of textiles, and of domestic, frequently domestic textile production. So to include a quilt, which has such a relationship with embroidery throughout time, was really important to me. And then Rada Nikolic is the third in this trio. And she was a 19-year-old girl from Serbia who was part of the anti-fascist movement there. And she was arrested for being part of this movement. And she was given a sentence of execution, and she was put in a camp. And while there, she embroidered upon a handkerchief, and she embroidered all of the names of the people in the camp with her and their dates of execution. And the date she doesn't include is her own death date. And I'm going to read you what she writes on this handkerchief. And Rada is an interesting one because she's one of the first ones that comes to my mind when I think of how did these people get these materials. How was she in this essentially concentration camp? And how did she get a needle and thread and this handkerchief? I do not know. But the story is so poignant. So she writes in Bosnian, Croatian, Montenegrin, and Serbian, which is also known as Serbo-Croatian. And the English translation reads, as a memento to my dear mommy from her daughter, Rada. Greetings to mommy, Koka, Sava, Toma, July 20th. I keep thinking about you and waiting for them to take me out. Rada Nikolic, B. Basta, born on August 28th, 1922. Arrested on January the 1st, convicted and shot on January 24th. She did not write this from her afterlife. That is the date she was scheduled to pass, by the way. So greetings to all dear and beloved, your Rada, July 25th. Don't grieve. I'm not the only one. Many innocents have perished. Again, another absolutely devastating story. Sorry that the zine is just devastation after devastation. But I mean, she is exceptional for her incredibly young age. She's 19. And she's also, of these 12, the only one who depicts herself in prison. She shows an image of what looks to be a very young woman behind prison bars. And the handkerchief itself is gridded. And so it feels like she's behind two layers of imprisonment. And once she died and once the camp was freed after the war, the handkerchief was given to her mother, who then gave it to a museum in Serbia. And this story was important for me to include for many reasons. But one of them is that I see information about other stories in this zine all over the place. People have written books. People have curated exhibitions. They're part of the conversation in the Americas and in Western Europe about exceptional embroidery, radical embroidery, emotional embroidery. But Rada Nikolic, I've never seen her be part of any of these conversations. And I like came across her by chance. I like came across a black and white image of her handkerchief on Instagram like 6 years ago and kept it in my bookmarks. And it speaks to the fact that my own understanding of incarceration embroidery is limited because I'm limited by primarily speaking English. And since publishing this, I have people in my Instagram DMs being like, hey, I wrote my master's dissertation on this incarcerated embroiderer from my country. I would love to share this information with you. And it's such an honor to be a person that people tell this information to. I'm not going to be sharing it because I'm not out here trying to plagiarize and steal their information. But the fact that I'm just so grateful that my own understanding of the global relationship between embroidery and institutionalization, it's forever expanding because people have their own stories to tell from different parts of the world that I'm just completely unfamiliar with.
Yeah, and we talk about this all the time on the show, but textiles and textile arts and crafts speak to our shared humanity across time and space, different cultures around the world. This is something we all share, is this art and act of expressing ourselves through these.
Absolutely.
Through these artistic mediums. So, I mean, this scene has been a heartbreaking, but also incredibly moving and powerful experience. Numerous instances while reading it where I cried. I've cried many times actually during this conversation today, trust listeners. You can't see me. But I mean, especially when you look up these pieces, you come face to face with the pain and the heartache that's literally embroidered into them. And as an embroidery historian who has probably looked at and handled, I'm guessing, thousands of textiles and garments throughout your career, what do you think it is about textiles that moves us that way?
So it's a long list in my notes, but I'm going to keep it succinct. I think it's what you were just saying, that they're so human. The humanity is present in every stitch. Oftentimes we don't know what these people looked like or what was happening in their lives oftentimes, but we see so much about them. We see how they felt, what kind of education they had, and what materials they had access to, how embroidery either helped or hurt them, or both, or somewhere in between, you know, their favorite colors or verses or hymns they knew, people in their lives, people they liked and disliked. And sometimes we even get pieces of their bodies. We get depictions of themselves, even though we don't have photographs, we don't have drawings, but we have how they see the world, and through them, we can see their world too, I think. And so the humanity is what drives me. It's, I think, why I study this stuff, because when it comes down to it, I love people and I love stories. And I think that these objects portray both so well, but they're also relatable. They are so accessible. Anybody can embroider as long as they have access to a needle, thread, and a piece of fabric. It's the fact that embroidery has been used all over the world for forever because of that accessibility and the fact that there's not a lot of gatekeeping. That, yeah, you can look up specific stitches that are complicated, but really what it is just piercing a fabric with a needle. And it's that, it is, I think, also that piercing the fabric with the needle, that tactility. I did 2 degrees in art history, and I think by the end of it, I was a little bit sick of learning about painting, because I wanted to feel. I wanted to understand how people of the past filled their lives with stuff in the way that I do. I think that everything that I think about with textiles and embroidery is about trying to get to the heart of the complexity of lives of the past in the way that I know the complexity of lives now, that we all have foods we're allergic to and people we like and we dislike and songs that get stuck in our heads. I think that textiles and embroidery in particular tells us so, it gives us that minutia, those tiny details and these little indicators of what made life so rich and complicated and difficult and joyful. I think that these embroideries have the capacity to tell stories that a lot of art forms don't, and that the historical record doesn't either. The historical record prioritizes people who are oftentimes not the people we see in embroidery. Embroidery is frequently women, it's frequently members of the middle and lower classes, it's people on the margins in many different ways. And embroidery is the way, I think, I'm biased, but I also really do think this, that embroidery is the way by which we can bring so many people into the conversation and understand their lives on such an intimate, detailed level.
Absolutely. And you've certainly demonstrated that with this book.
Looking for another history podcast that explores art and design from around the globe? Well, check out The Art of Crime, a history podcast about the unlikely collisions between true crime and the arts.
The latest season is titled Queen of Crime, Madame Tussaud and the Chamber of Horrors, and it chronicles the career of the real Madame Tussaud, kicking off in pre-revolutionary Paris and wrapping up in Victorian London. It also charts the evolution of the Chamber of Horrors, a showroom where Tussaud displayed effigies of notorious criminals.
Did you know that wax modeling was used to study human anatomy for centuries? How about that Tussauds Wax Museum played a crucial role in the outbreak of the French Revolution? Or that Tussauds made a bust of Napoleon by coating his face in plaster and sticking straws up his nose so that he could breathe?
As you follow Tussauds from Paris to London, you'll learn why women dominated the business of wax modeling in England, what it was like to travel in a 19th century stagecoach, and how Tussauds got swept up in one of the most heated Victorian debates about the ethics of capital punishment. Subscribe to the Art of Crime podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we are running out of time today, but I do want to say that while there is several heartbreaking stories throughout this book, there is also, as we've attested to already, hope. And that is attested to in the last section of the book that is dedicated to Roy Matterson, the only living embroiderer in the zine. So who is Roy and why did you choose to end with his story?
So Roy Matterson is an American man who was in prison. And while in prison, he taught himself how to embroider. He was bored and he was thinking back to his grandma and remembered how she always looked like she was having a nice calming time when embroidering. And so he fashioned his own embroidery supplies. He made an embroidery hoop out of the big lid of one of those like plastic jugs. And he got underwear as his canvas. And he unraveled socks, again, unraveling. And he taught himself how to stitch. And he started making little badges for fellow prisoners, like sports teams and stuff. And he would trade them for things like coffee and cigarettes. And then eventually he started making these miniature pictures, depictions of himself in the woods or life at home on his porch or famous pop stars or baseball heroes. They're tiny. They're just a few inches. And they have tens of thousands of stitches in each of them. And I like that he was called at this time when he was in prison, Betsy Ross. It's a reference that is lost on all of the British people in my life. But I find that the inclusion of Betsy Ross a pretty interesting, an interesting thing because it ties back into embroidery and gender, but also embroidery and identity making, that Betsy Ross is the person who made our flag. And she did that with Stitch and this idea that all of his fellow prisoners were like, this guy is inventing something totally new too. I think that's awesome. So Ray left prison and is now a full-time embroidery artist. That's his career, is embroidery. And that brings me such joy. I had to include him at the end because he is the most recent one, and this is a chronological zine, but also because we need some hope in here. Yeah, there are glimmers of hope throughout this thing, but we need a reminder that embroidery, it can get your mind and your body out of hard times and hard places, but it can also be for both the good times and the bad. It sees you through all sorts of life moments and feelings and circumstances. And I hope that ending, that hopeful end note will be a little bit of a sigh of relief for people after this, that just like each of these 12 stories is so unique and is as different as, like, it's different in all variables, that each of these stories speaks to a unique set of circumstances, that embroidery itself speaks to that too, that embroidery in incarceration is not just devastating and brutal, that it also offers a way to get out, to think beyond, to feel like there's a better future.
Isabella, thank you so, so much for joining us this week. This has just been so remarkable.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been such an honor. Thank you.
Isabella, thank you so much for joining us all this week and sharing such incredible insights into these often overlooked but incredibly significant and important creators. Just listeners, we will, of course, provide a link to purchase Stitching Freedom, Embroidery, and Incarceration, which at just £10 or $13 makes a very affordable entry point into this fascinating topic. And hopefully we're going to hear a lot more about this in the future as research continues to be done on these individuals.
Yes, hopefully so. And dress listeners, walk, don't run to listen to Isabella's podcast, So What?, which is dedicated entirely to celebrating historic needlework and its creators. And you should also absolutely follow her on her social medias at Instagram and TikTok with her handle Historic Embroidery, one of my all-time favorite accounts. She just does really, really beautiful work there. And we will, of course, be sharing some collaborative reels with her this week on many of the pieces we discussed in this week's episode. You can find that on our Instagram handle at @just_podcast. If you are listening to this in the future and you want to find the Instagram content specifically connected to this two-part episode, check out the hashtag Dressed491 and Dressed492. That's Dressed and the numbers 491 and Dressed492.
And you only have until June 30th, Dress listeners, to register for our second week of our fashion history tour this fall. The first week sold out quite quickly, and we added a second week, which is going to be October 12th through the 19th. So please consider joining us. Also, you can join me if you happen to be in New York City on Fridays at the Metropolitan Museum of Art or Fashion History Fridays at the Met. And those are 90-minute tours where we explore the Met's prominent collection to seek out 10 of the museum's most fashionable masterpieces. And we get into a little bit of art history. We get into a whole bunch of fashion history and, you know, kind of just hang out in that space in between. And it's very, very fun. So please consider joining us. You can register and find out more information on our website, which is dressedhistory.com.
And dressedhistory.com is where you can also register for my very soon to air live upcoming fashion history course, What Women Wore to the Revolution, 1930s to 1960s. I'm very excited. I added a book club element this year, so I'm excited to see you in person or on Zoom on Sunday starting June 23rd. But I do want to say that you do not have to attend live. I get a lot of inquiries asking if there is a recording of the class, and that does come to you within 24 hours. So if you are halfway across the world and the time doesn't work out, or you just simply can't make the live class, you do have that option. So I hope you will consider joining me.
On that note, dress listeners, that concludes our episode for today. May you consider the many ways our lives are stitched, quilted, woven, and embroidered together next time you get dressed. More Dressed coming your way next week. Dressed, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dressed Media.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck and check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big.